Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the Luke and Pete Show. My name is Pete Donaldson.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Welcome into our cave of shite. Something I didn't mention on
Coming live from the cave of shite. Great.
Exactly. We were talking about space, the final frontier, etc. Yeah. Earlier on this week on Monday's show. I neglected to mention that I was involved in a family pub quiz situation. I know a lot of you have also been doing quizzes over the lockdown period. Not my family, someone else's family, that's very clear. And yeah, I was doing a pub quiz and one of the questions was, what is the name of a 1981 space mission / shuttle that was named after a South American country? And I went, right, that can't be what I think I'm thinking because it is a completely different spelling. And I would like to take the time now on Thursday to air my grievances about the fact it's not named after Columbia, the country. It is named after, I believe, the river or a ship that was on that river that resides in the north of America. I was very upset about that, Luke, because that lost me a point.
Yeah, it is really frustrating when you, especially if you're a pedant like me, when you get questions asked and you know the answer, but the question asker themselves doesn't quite know it, and or the question itself is worded in quite a vague fashion. It kind of makes me it sends my anxiety up actually when that happens. So you must have been very, I mean, who were you doing this with? Your friends, family, or something? So were you in a position where you couldn't really pipe up?
Didn't feel like I had the. We had people from who were dialing in from Italy. We had people from Hartlepool and the surrounding areas. So I didn't feel like I could kind of, you know, do a David Brent and get annoyed about it.
Yeah, you'd go home and get a book. Mr. Spock is half human, half Vulcan. Yeah, disappointing. So did that ruin your weekend? Did you win the quiz in the end?
No, we came second to a boy whose birthday it was. So
What sort of Mickey Mouse jamboree are they running here?
Joke. Absolute joke. On the Sabbath as well.
Pete, I mean, what I would have done is I would have tried really hard to win so it wouldn't have mattered. Those kind of injustices, they play in my mind.
You're like Michael Jordan in that documentary where he'll make up a slight that never happened so it'll fire him up enough to win a basketball match. He sounds... The deeper I get into this bloody documentary, he sounds madder and madder. And even then, the documentary was fact-checked and basically, you know, gone over with a fine-tooth comb by Michael Jordan and his people themselves. So to put him in the best light. And he still looks like a madman.
Different breed, though, isn't it? I mean, the thing is...
It turns you into a maniac. Being an incredibly gifted artist on the basketball court or football field, I genuinely think... You can't be a normal person and be a born winner. You just can't be.
I'd be really interested in your take on it because when I watched the documentary, and I've seen it all in its entirety, and for those who don't know, or those who have been living under a rock or whatever, and we will get to your emails because we said this would be an email special, but just get this done first. For those who don't know, we're talking about The Last Dance, right, about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls in the 90s and their final season. And... there was a lot of, not necessarily, I think it would be unfair to call it backlash, but I think a lot of surprise and certainly a lot of chat around the way Michael Jordan particularly behaved among his colleagues and his teammates and the franchise in general, just because he wanted to win so bad. And a lot of people have said, you know, through the lens of 2020, would this behavior be acceptable? And I have to admit, my first response to that was, and I suppose still is, well, what do you fucking expect? I mean, he isn't going to be the kind of guy who is going to get you to the way he got those. I mean, not necessarily on his own, but certainly made a huge, huge contribution by just being like, oh, don't worry about it. And don't forget, a lot of it was based around the idea that if you're a young rookie or you're a problematic character and you're not going to dedicate yourself the way he is and you're not going to turn up on time and you're not going to practice hard, et cetera, you're going to get dug out for that. And I didn't even necessarily see, and I won't spoil it for you, Pete, if you haven't seen all of it, but I didn't necessarily see his teammates who were being interviewed today about that time even really complaining about it. None of them complained about it. They were just like, oh, it's just how it was. And looking back on it, maybe it was a bit harsh, but I never would have got where I wanted to get if it wasn't for that.
Mm. No, I mean, when he punches that small player on the
pitch, but he punched him back.
He did. Well, he started it by pushing him. Yeah. I think he punched him in the chest, and then Michael Jordan punched him, and he said, "Oh, I hit the smallest player on the team." And it's like, because you don't see much of that guy on the field. I'm sort of like going, "Well, what was his job? If he was that short, he shouldn't have been anywhere near basketball."
He's a legend, by the way, Steve Kerr. He's a coach of the Golden State Warriors, who've done so much in basketball. You know.
Yeah, he definitely looked more like a coach. I enjoyed the documentary immensely because I have no idea about basketball. I've never even seen him match before.
Nor have I, really. Didn't Steve Kerr come across as an amazing guy, though? Like, he seemed really, really sound.
Yeah, he seemed pretty level-headed. I think everyone did. Magic Johnson sounds like a really nice chap. Is he a really nice chap? Has he got some shit that he's brilliant and lovely? The problem with saying, I'll use the Wrestle Me thing where we were talking about, I think he's Mexican wrestler, Alberto Del Rio. We were talking about how good he was in the WrestleManias that we watched. And then last week, he was arrested. I think he's in prison again. He's arrested once again for doing something terrible. It's very hard to review something that's 10 years old because in that time, someone will have done something dreadful that you just don't want to fucking think about. So,
oh yeah, I fell foul of it during Last Dance. Not similar to you, not really having any kind of knowledge about the subject. No. Real basis and knowledge of the subject. And I think I tweeted at one point a certain player who was who seemed really cool in an interview and got bombarded with replies because that man was a rapist. So I had no clue. I mean, it's just you don't have any idea or any knowledge really, do you? So I found the whole thing. I mean, the coolest guy in the whole thing was Phil Jackson, I thought.
Yeah, I just like how long he is.
Yeah,
like,
all of these men,
especially when they get a bit older, they get a bit, you know, their face gets a bit rounder and a bit fuller. And you sort of like, oh, he looks pretty lovely. And then in their previous lives as basketball players, you're like, how are they so long? They don't look long now. Like it must be such a surprise if you see someone in a coffee shop that's like sitting down having a cup of tea or whatever, and then they stand up to be like 6'5". And go from a sitting position. It's just the most.
Well, I'm 6'3", Pete. I mean, I can give you a bit of insight if you want.
Oh, gross. I don't even want to think of it. Yeah, but imagine you, but like 3 or 4 inches taller and really thin as well. It's bizarre. A bizarre
That's
physicality.
A
I can't get with.
Vicious.
No, but like really, like, well, you're quite broad shouldered. So like there's no, they're lighter than you. Like it's weird. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand.
It's a brilliant documentary though, isn't it? Anyway, it's really well done.
Oh, it's smashing.
The footage
smashing,
I've got is wicked.
Right. Some of the moving back and forward is a bit confusing. Yeah. I'm like, what year am I in?
Yes, but because the thing is, like, it's really fine when you're watching something and it's set in 1996 and then it scrolls back to 1910. Like, you can get that, right? This one's like 1997. Oh, let's scroll all the way back to summer 1995. And it's like, it's not really that different, is it? So for those of us who don't know anything about basketball, we might need to have to think about that a little bit.
I'm trying to look at the like the bus that they're on. It's like, was that the old bus or the new bus? Has anyone got a mobile phone in their hand? What was somebody that I know tweeted that his in a slightly poor way, in my opinion. My missus said that asked whether when you get on a coach as a footballer, do you get dropped off at your house or do you get dropped off somewhere else after you've played a football match? Like, say Arsenal go to, I don't know, Stoke or something, and then they drive back to Arsenal. Does everyone get dropped off at the stadium and everyone picks up their cars?
Yeah, I believe so.
Or do you get, so I imagine that's the case. But like, is Mr. sort of asked, like, could could you not just drop people off on the way? Like, did they not get dropped off on the way? And I was thinking,
let us out.
Why? Yeah. Well, like, because I used to live in Holloway Road, and I used to get a train back from up north, and it would go whiz straight past my house and go to King's Cross, and I'd have to get, like, you know, travel another like half an hour back up the line. Effectively, I could see my house from the train as it rattled through into London. I'd be like, oh, for crying out, could they not just let me out here? So I'm thinking, like, why wouldn't, if your house is on the way, why couldn't you just get let out and just
so just I read a story, Pete, it might have been one of those Ben McIntyre books that he does about spies, like those real life John le Carré books.
Yeah.
And there's an eccentric, I forget who it was exactly, it doesn't matter, but this eccentric guy is part of the Secret Service, I think. I mean, I might be having the complete wrong end of the stick, but anyway, someone I read about back in the day definitely used to do this, where they would get the train back to their nearest station, but their house and their back garden backed onto the railway line. And apparently this one geezer, like 5 minutes from getting off at the station, he would wait for the train to go past his garden, then throw his briefcase out the window so it landed his garden, so he didn't have to carry it all the way home.
That's amazing.
Which is like, by the way, if you can throw it into your garden, it's probably got nothing important in it, which means it's probably quite light, so I don't really know what you're doing there. Anyway, Pete, let's have a break and come back and do some emails, because we didn't do any at all on Monday.
All right.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back with the Luke and the Pete Show. It's a Thursday, so we're going to be filling your hungry ears with some delicious emails. Shall I start, Luke?
Please do.
All right, we've got one from David. I don't believe this one for a second. Hi, the Luke and the Pizza. I thought I would share a story to make you both wince. My friend's mum is a nurse, and a couple of years ago, we asked her about some of the worst injuries she had ever seen. She told us quite a few that made us want to throw up, but there was one that was far worse than any other. She told us she was on shift one night when a guy was brought in with a severe injury to his man parts. She asked him what had happened, and gentlemen, gird your loins. and this is horrible. And after some embarrassment, he said that he'd been using a public toilet when he heard a noise in the next cubicle. He looked down and saw a glory hole and decided stupidly that he would stick his knob through it. Unknown to him, the guy in the cubicle next to him wasn't there for that. He was shooting up heroin and freaked out when he saw a stranger's penis coming towards him. So he did what anyone would do, and shoved the email right through the guy's member. At that moment, the guy who had shoved his penis to the wall instinctively pulled back, and when doing so, his manhood came back through the hole, but the needle didn't, which meant that it split the penis in half lengthways. Imagine the forked tongue of a snake, says David. After I had stopped feeling faint, I asked her how it all finished up. Fortunately, the guy was able to be sewn up, and everything ended up working again as it should, as well as not being infected by the needle. I think it's a lesson learned by anyone, for everyone, though, especially Pete. Don't go stick your penis through holes in the wall. Another fine job by the NHS. David, I think possibly the friend's nursing mum has been taken for a ride there, because, so to speak, because the man sticking his penis into the glory hole, he's been up to no good. He can come back with that story saying that he put his penis through a glory hole and a heroin addict jabbed
it's not a great cover story, though, is it?
I mean, it's not.
What could you be doing that's worse than that?
I mean, he's probably just tried to do that BME thing where you split your penis into two. Like the BME, the body modification guys.
I don't think any of this happened. I think this is all complete bollocks.
Well, I think the friend's mum saw the penis being split. People's penises get split. Lads like putting their penises in weird places. So I reckon he just made up a story and that became the story. But I don't buy the knee-jerk reaction from an inebriated heroin user is to jab a fucking syringe through a penis, especially when it's valuable heroin, if you're jabbing a syringe.
That's the thing, Pete, right? I'm telling you now, if I put myself in a position, whatever I was doing in a public toilet cubicle, I might say I was taking drugs, say I wasn't, but I'm putting myself in that position. I'm trying to empathise with the situation. I'm sat there. Maybe I'm just taking a shit. Call me a bluff old traditionalist. I wouldn't take a shit in the public toilet, but say I am. I'm sat there.
Why wouldn't you? What if you really needed one?
Okay, it depends on the public toilet. It's not the point. If I sat there and a penis came through the hole in the side, I am telling you now, I would probably ignore it, finish what I was doing, and just try and get out there as soon as possible. I would not be doing what I think, at best, is a low percentage play and starting to engage with the penis in some way to try and get rid of it. And I certainly would not be shoving a sharp implement into another man's penis, because I don't think the punishment fits the crime. That's why.
No, I don't think it is. Yeah, and you could accidentally have just popped it through there by accident if you were particularly gifted. I've never touched a man's penis. Would you know? I think I've never touched a man's penis skin on skin. So I'd take the opportunity, give it a little slap, something, see what another man's penis feels like in my hand.
Just would slap you not? It as hard as you can.
Would you? Well, that's what they want. They want someone to touch it. Would you give it a little touch?
No, I think if I was deciding to go down the route of touching another man's penis skin on skin, I think I would like to know the person.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah. It's important, is it, to get a fuller picture? Right, I see. Yeah. Interesting.
Can I move us swiftly on to an email that I think will be really well received by our listeners, but actually quite poorly received by you, Pete?
Okie dokie.
It's a beauty.
Go ahead.
The title, although regular listeners will know that I give little titles to these emails so I don't forget what they are. And the title I've given for this one from a while back is "Pete has angered a gamer and I am here for it."
Oh, no, no, no.
Hello, lads. As a long-time fan of the Football Ramble, Football Ramble Daily, I decided to get stuck into the Luke and Pete show while I have a lot of time on my hands during lockdown. I love the show, but my once favourite rambler has got my knickers right in a twist.
Oh, no.
Pete, during episode 199.98, I couldn't help but notice you call Zelda Breath of the Wild, in quotes, a game for children. As a 23-year-old man who spends most of his free time playing computer games, I find this assessment repulsive. Beside the main game being relatively challenging, there is an unbelievable wealth of things to do. Yes, you've managed to make it to Hyrule Castle and defeat the mighty Ganon himself after completing 40 shrines. What about the other 40 shrines visible to the player? What about the other 40 that are hidden and only unlocked via the completion of quests? If you've completed all that, how about collecting the 900 Korok seeds spread throughout the game? And what about finding the odd ball at a certain location at a certain time of day to access the monster shop and then saving up enough monster parts to unlock unique items with unique buffs? A child can do all this? Show me the child! This almost certainly won't make the show, as I'm sure you have more pressing matters to bring to our attention. But if you're still making use of your Nintendo Switch, I highly recommend Dragon Quest XI. All the best, Ross from Birmingham. Pete, this man is fuming.
He is, isn't he? Yeah. I'm sorry, mate. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a
fair assessment. Down now? Because you were making a cheap political point about me the other week.
Well, I mean, the fact that I am only like 5 shrines into that game dictates that I don't really have, I'm not in a position to discuss the difficulty. But certainly the stylistic cues of that game is definitely slightly childish. So, you know.
But Pete, you've apologised to Ross of Birmingham, but are you going to apologise to me as well?
No, because you buy the maddest games ever. I mean,
I'm playing Witcher 3 still.
You still getting through that? Yeah, I enjoyed that. It was very good. It's slightly more adult experience, I think it's fair to say.
Well, sometimes you cut people in half.
You do. Sometimes you cut people in half.
There's nothing more adult than that. I'm going to tell you what, don't put your penis through a hole in the cubicle when the Geralt of Rivia is on the other side.
You'll have it right off in his little scar. Oi, oi, oi. I bet his penis is a right mess, to be fair.
Oh, mate. He's covered in scars in his upper body,
The rest of his body is absolutely ruinous, isn't it? Disaster Report 4, Summer Memories. Is my recommendation. I don't know whether I've talked about this on this podcast, but in the shadow of a massive earthquake, you must brave a destroyed city where your choices will determine who survives. Disaster Report 4.
Is it on the Switch?
The worst. Yes, it is. It's the worst game. I paid £55 for it, inexplicably.
For God's sake. It is the worst
piece of shit I have ever played in my life. It is a PlayStation 3 era game that they've managed to convert for the Switch. It is dreadful. You just spend your time walking around the ruins of a city, just giving people sandwiches and, you know, telling people where their friends are. It is unspeakably bad.
What would Ross from Birmingham think of it?
He would have an issue with it because he's clearly a man who respects games.
Oh, suck it up.
How old is he? 23?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not that old in the grand scheme of things. I mean, we're ancient compared to him.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. Another quick one from me, Pete, is from Ian, who says, in a weird Luke and Pete coincidence, you spoke on Monday, that's last Monday, of the distinctly average director McGee. Do you remember that, Pete?
Yes, I do, yeah.
But apparently we failed to mention his magnum opus because he did, in fact, direct the video for 1 week by the Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, wow. So there is a bit of a Luke and Pete connection. Very, very oversaturated colours, that proper 90s video, that, isn't it?
It's been...
It's up there with, like, Litz, My Own Worst Enemy, in that kind of very 90s...
Or Steal My Sunshine by Len.
Oversaturated colour. Yes, banger.
On the moped in slow motion. Great
Love
tune,
it.
Though. Great tune.
Got a lot of time for that. Fantastic. Omar Khan has got in touch. Hello, Omar. Thank you very much. Hi, gang. Gang, we're a gang now. I think you may find it interesting to know you've made some uncanny predictions / commentary which have come to fruition on the Luke and Pete Show. I found myself to be in the position where I was drastically behind all of my podcasts, to the point where in April 2020 I'd only listened to December 2018 of our show. This, however, has been proved to be a boon during the lockdown, as Luke and Pete, my episodes are generally the Seinfeld of podcasts. I now find myself this show about nothing.
Compliment to us. I mean, I've never watched everyone seems to like
I'll take that. He turns up in that Michael John documentary, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. Hey, no one's pleased to see him as well.
Even Michael John can't pretend that he watches Seinfeld. He's like, hey, these guys here, they watch your film, they watch your TV show. And he's like, oh, thank you very much. Oh, great. so weird. This is where the plot thickens. I've been listening to two or so Luke and Pete Show episodes while doing my household chores, and I'm starting to catch up. This is where the plot thickens. Whilst doing the washing up this morning, I listened to 136 episode Digger Destruction from the 24th of January 2019. I was so shocked with what I was hearing that I dropped the slotted spoon I was scrubbing. Ooh, they are difficult to wash sometimes. In this episode, you touch on four individual topics which are sufficiently remote that they cannot all be classed as one uncanny guess slash statement. I've ordered and rated these based on the strength of the prediction in a Nando-style grading. Do you want lemon and herb, medium, extra hot or extra hot?
I think start from lemon and herb and build
all up. All right. Knocky dokey. JCB chat turned to how an irate Scouse digger driver smashed up a hotel foyer as revenge for an unpaid bill, and comment is made regarding it like a riot, which has echoes of obviously civil unrest all around the world. That's your lemon and herb. That's where we're starting.
That is tenuous.
That is tenuous, but it does get better.
We mentioned the word riot, and then there was a riot around the world somewhere at some point later.
But it does. I'm not saying we started anything. I'm just saying that we're obviously, you know, we're talking about something. We're talking about four different elements of life that in one show has been replicated within the last couple of weeks in the world, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Right.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah.
Medium or extra hot?
I told you, start off and build up.
All right, okay. Boris Johnson, this is medium. Whilst on the chat of diggers, you referenced how Boris Johnson was paid 10 grand to stand in front of a JCB for a speech, and there seems to be general incredulity that this was acceptable. Little did you know, 6 months later, becoming leader of the Conservatives and ultimately becoming PM, and December the 19th, would continue expressing his JCB fetish by driving a JCB through a polystyrene wall labelled Brexit. The JCB Boris Johnson action continues. It's hot. We're getting hotter. We're getting spicier.
It wants to start getting hotter.
Yeah. Next, the conversation turns to how certain web browsers have a plugin which places warnings and flags on sites where the content is known to be spurious. We're talking InfoWars, Alex Jones, David Icke, etc. Little did Luke and Pete of January 29 consider that in June 20, effing president of the United States would no less would have his fact check warnings on his tweets due to the utter load of bollocks spouted. You then commented that if you're an author or consumer of content deserving of such a warning, you really need to have a long look at yourself. I'm going to move straight on to extra hot.
Okay.
As part of discussions regarding a couple who were shocked to find strangers in flagrante in their cruise room, the chat wanders over how cruise ships are hotbeds for illnesses, Legionnaire's disease, and how a norovirus outbreak on a cruise ship is the closest thing to a modern-day plague we will ever have. I listened in horror with the knowledge of the key role that cruise ships would play in the initial stages of the coming COVID pandemic and the larger crisis to come. Luke Moore, we've gone from lemon and herb to extra spicy.
Yeah.
Uncanny? Or just the Luke and Pete show in microcosm?
I think it's just the Luke and Pete show in microcosm, although I do understand that there are some interesting kind of portents there. And apologies to those who could hear my cat whining away in the background during that, Pete. He wanted to go out, as he always does when I'm in the middle of recording a show. But that is an amazing piece of work from that emailer to find those coincidences and share them with us.
In one episode, just a lot of, you know, inverse kind of
amazing
from the future.
Can I take the email section and turn it a little bit more cerebral? And this is a bit of a gamble, and I don't fully understand this myself, but someone called Pete has emailed in. I presume it's not you, Pete, although your track record on this subject has been far better than mine. But it's from a maths PhD student at Cambridge, talking about the holes in straws and all that kind of thing.
Pile in.
All right, I'm going to read it, and maybe we can try and pick over the bones of it at the end and see what part of it we understand. You probably understand more of it than me because you've got this much better background in it than me, as we discussed before. But we'll give it a go. This is from Pete.
Okie dokie.
He's not given his surname because he's probably ashamed of emailing our show. He's obviously should be have better things to do, but we very, very much appreciate him sending in the email in. He says, "Dear Luke and Pete, on a recent episode, you discussed a question from a listener about how many holes a straw has. I found this very interesting, and clearly you did too, since it made it into the ad for your podcast during Football Ramble Daily. I am a maths PhD student in Cambridge, and as with many other discussions of this nature, this makes me fully qualified to ruin your fun with a boring speech. Here we go. The classification of surfaces and the problem of how many holes something has is actually quite a subtle one in maths. In short, this is because holes are not actually part of the surface you are trying to describe, and being precise about whether or not they are there is actually quite tricky. It depends on exactly what you mean by hole. It turns out there are, in fact, different types of hole. The most common definition is called the genus. This is equal to the number of different closed loops you can draw on the surface and then cut along, which does not make the surface become disconnected, i.e. split into two parts. For example, right, as every child can tell you, a balloon has a genus zero. Since you, if you cut along any loop drawn on the balloon, you will end up with two separate parts. A hollow donut has genus one. Since if you draw a circular loop going through the center, i.e. the shorter circle, and cut it along, and cut along it, the object remains in one piece. It becomes a horseshoe shape. Similarly, a donut with G holes will have a genus G. From this, you can see that a straw, in fact, has genus zero, since cutting along any loop you draw will separate the straw into two parts. So by this definition, a straw, in fact, has zero holes. Strangely, this means a straw would only have a hole if you fastened the ends together and made it into a donut. Interestingly, though, by a different definition, you might say it has one hole. Although they both have genus zero, a straw is different from a balloon because you can draw a loop around the straw which can't be smoothly contracted to a single point. This is not the case on a balloon, where any loop you draw can be shrunk to a point without breaking the loop. In fancy maths language, they have different Betti numbers. The one type of unshrinkable loop on a straw means it has one one-dimensional hole. A balloon, on the other hand, has no one-dimensional holes, but it does have a two-dimensional hole where all the air is trapped. So by this definition, they both have a hole, but they are different types of hole. I hope that wasn't too boring, and thanks for all your chat during these strange times, Pete. Now, Pete, I don't understand really any of that, so maybe you can help me.
I think it's very much like, you know, when you're a kid and you get told by someone that time is the fourth dimension, erroneously, and then you kind of realize that it's not. And then someone tries to explain to you how you may display the fourth dimension on a three-dimensional matrix, and you just can't get your head around it. So people have tried to explain the fourth dimension to me so many times and how that might, you know, manifest itself in a visual kind of situation for me. I honestly cannot get my head around what that man has just written into an email.
No, same. And when you find out that people who study something like the origin of the universe, or they get into such deep theoretical physics that they're having to do maths in different dimensions, it's just, I mean, no one is going to get that. I mean, you're talking about really a handful of people. I mean, Malcolm Gladwell talks about it, doesn't he, when he talks about how the criticism he gets for his books is that he gets criticism from scientists that say his work is too broad. And he's like, well, yeah, but the thing is, you're writing a book for probably an audience of 200 people. Because I'm trying to write a book for an audience of millions of people, ideally. That's the whole point of this. So I think with this type of thing, the audience for it is so small that it's going to be very, very difficult for any normal, in quotes, person or regularly educated person to get it. And I think with the dimensions thing, the only thing I can offer on that is that I was once taught that if you draw a stick man who can only move back and forward or up and down on a flat piece of paper, it's obviously in theory going to be impossible for him to understand the third dimension, i.e. depth. And that's the position we're in about the fourth dimension. I think the only way it can properly be explained is through mathematical equations, right? Which is of no use to anyone, certainly not any use to me.
This is no use to anyone. Get out of my sight. Take your bloody
But we welcome formulas and, away. And appreciate Pete emailing into hello@lucanpeacher.com, because I for one, I'm very, very happy that a PhD student in maths from Cambridge is finding anything at all of worth in this show, to be honest.
Can you imagine?
The mind does boggle.
Got an email from Dave Clayton. Oh, Dave Clayton. Who's in Japan at the moment. Listening to your discussion about glass and Japanese windows on Monday reminds me of a theory I once read about technological developments and the use of glass in Europe and Asia. Consider this. Number one, to the lack of glass technology in China, sight-correcting lenses did not develop and become used there. Number two, scientists and thinkers on both continents would read by lantern or candlelight late into the night, thus ruining their vision. Number three, European scientists, unlike their Asian counterparts, could correct their vision with lenses, this allowing them to read effectively for more hours per day for more years into their old age, when scientists apparently come up with their best ideas due to standing on the shoulders of a greater volume of giants. Long story short, Europe caught up with and surpassed the earlier technological advancements of China because of glass. Still leaves us with a question that Dave writes at the end of his email. Why didn't China develop glass?
That's all I want to know. That's all I asked at the start of this. I can't think of why. I know it's the case. I don't know why it's the case, and no one else seems to know either. Would Pete, the PhD student, know? Maybe.
I think it might be. I think that might be part of a joke, actually. And why? What? And why didn't China develop glass? They had good china for cups.
That's I'm what confused. I said.
What they used to use?
Well, they developed china really early on, so they didn't need to develop glass as a vessel.
Right.
That's what I said. So, you said it was wrong.
Did we? I didn't say it was wrong. I was talking about the windows and the idea of having no windows in a Japanese house. I didn't care about your cup theory.
Yeah, it's got conflated at some point along the way.
Well, speaking of like things that may or may not be true, I mean, I don't necessarily do you necessarily buy the scientists in the West having glass, so therefore having corrective lenses, and therefore because people travel.
I think you know that I don't know.
Well, it was like somebody taking us, Malcolm Gladwell. Somebody was telling us, or reminded me of, I think it was in Freakonomics, where he was sort of talking about, Mayor Giuliani, where he sort of said that his zero tolerance kind of approach to policing, like really hard nosed policing, really helped his city to become a less crime ridden kind of situation. And then Gladwell apparently pointed out that it's apparently more down to the fact that abortion was made legal 18 years before.
So yeah, that's
that's
in Freakonomics, but that wasn't written by Gladwell. That's written by Stephen Dubner, I think.
Oh, right, okay. There you go.
Yeah, but that's definitely...
is Gladwell, isn't it? Oh, am I going
to be... No, Freakonomics is Dubner and Levitt, but you're right to say that is in that book. You're absolutely right, yeah. That does exist as a theory in that book, yeah. What was I going to say to you? With the conflation on the glass thing, what I actually originally said was that is that why they didn't have glass in Japanese houses? I think that's where the confusion comes from. But I'd like to know if there's any kind of scholar out there who can tell us definitively if it is true that glass didn't develop in that part of the world till much later on, or if they didn't develop it independently, and for what reason. That's what I'm going for.
All right. Then.
So yeah, that's Pete. That's what I want to get out of this. Really, that's the only reason I'm still doing this show now.
Hello, lukeandpeteshow.com. If you've got any ideas, if you've read a book on the matter, if you watched a YouTube video on the matter, we want to
know. Well, we've got to draw a line somewhere. Have you been watching any good YouTube channels recently, Peter?
No, I've not. I've my YouTube drop. My YouTube video watching has dropped off exponentially. Again? Taken out. Yeah, it just keeps on.
Because that boat you sailed out into the Mediterranean.
I just want everyone to play with a straight back.
Yeah, I think we all do. All right, let's wrap it up here then, Pete. Thank you very much, everyone, for getting in touch. If you do want to get in touch again, hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. We're at Luke and Pete Show on Twitter as well, which we do peruse occasionally, so it is worth tweeting us on there. We'll be back on Monday with more of this nonsense. I'm hoping at some point soon we might even be able to get back into our studio, but we're not sure when yet. So we'll keep on going as we are for now. But thank you very much for your listenership. We do appreciate it. And all that's left for us to say is have a lovely weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
Touchy bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever
made that connection?
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.